Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey.
Family, welcome to day 151. We are in 1 Samuel chapter 11 and 12. Just two short chapters. All narrative-based. If you have not done the reading, you want to stop the video, stop the audio, go do the reading. If you have done the reading, let's dive in. All right, the quick synopsis here is that Saul has been anointed king. He's been chosen to be king. He is most likely not God's pick, but he is the consolation, okay? And if there's one thing that we want to drive home as a timeless truth, I know typically I leave the timeless truth for the end, but it's this: you can change God's answer. That doesn't mean that you've changed God's mind. Okay. You could change God's answer. Doesn't mean that you change his mind. And so there's a difference between God saying, yeah, and yeah, all right. So you can wear God down, right? And so Saul is not God's pick. Saul is picked by God because of the stubbornness of the people, because they are donkeys. God finds a donkey herder. That's this, like, context. I want us to now realize there's a three-step process for the establishment of a king, okay? The first is that a king is anointed and then publicly recognized. That's number one. Number two, kings are tested. And then three, there's the validation of that king. Okay, so there's this three-step process: anointing and public recognition, testing, and then validation of the kingship. Almost like confirmation, validation of the kingship. So Saul has been selected as king, anointed as king, publicly recognized as king. But what we're going to find in chapters 11 and 12 is the testing of King Saul and then the validation of that kingship. So chapter 11 begins, and here's the word: Nahash, the Ammonite, went up and besieged Jabesh Gilead. We've seen Jabesh Gilead before, and we've seen this word Nahash before. And all the men of Jabesh said to him, "Make a treaty with us." We already know this is not good, and we'll be subject to you. But Nahash the Ammonite replied, "I will make a treaty with you only on the condition that I gouge out the right eye of every one of you, and so bring disgrace on all Israel." The elders of Jabesh said to him, "Give us 7 days so that we can send messengers throughout Israel. If no one comes to rescue us, we will surrender to you." So when the messengers came to Gibeah, another key city that we've seen before, of Saul, and reported these terms to the people, they all wept aloud. Just then Saul was returning from the fields behind his oxen, and he said, "What is wrong?" Okay, why are they weeping? They repeat it to Saul, the message. When Saul heard their words, the Spirit of God came powerfully on him. He burned with anger. He took a pair of oxen, cut them into pieces, and sent the pieces by messengers throughout Israel, proclaiming, "This is what will be done to the oxen of anyone who does not follow Saul and Samuel." Then the terror of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out together as one. Huge detail, together as one. When Saul mustered them at Bezek, the men of Israel numbered 300,000 and those of Judah 30,000. And of course, they fight against Nahash and the Ammonites, and they defeat the Ammonites. Okay. Now Saul is confirmed as king, okay? So it's going to say this in verse 15. So all the people went to Gilgal and made Saul king in the presence of the Lord. There they sacrificed fellowship offerings before the Lord, and Saul and all Israel held a great celebration. So you may be asking, wait a second, didn't they just make Saul king? Like, didn't I just read about that? Why are they making him king again? Well, there's a three-step process whereby a king is anointed to be king, publicly recognized as king, tested, and then validated as king. Their kingship gets validated by the fact that they pass the test. Okay? So Saul passed the test. So Saul's kingship doesn't get off to a bad start. Saul is not immediately a bad king, okay? Saul is, this is great. This is a phenomenal start. All right, so we'll get into chapter 12 in a second. So that's context, okay? That if you're confused as to why Saul is getting anointed as king or presented as king or being made king again, it's because it's a three-step process in the making of a king. Now, let's get into some nerdy nuggets. First of all, who was Nahash? Well, this is why I love Logos Bible Study Software, because this is chapter 11, verse 1, first word, Nahash. All I've got to do is click on that word Nahash and open up like my lexicon. And I'm just going to just click on the Strong's. And here we go, Nahash. Oh no, Strong's 5175, okay? Serpent, snake, viper, i.e. a poisonous reptile which may represent several species. Sea serpent, sea monster, creature at home in the water. This may refer to the mythological dragon or normal crocodile. So that's Nahash, okay? Bronze serpent, representation of a serpent made of bronze later to become an idol among the sons of Israel. Wait a second. So you have an Ammonite king named Serpent? Oh, you can't make this up. This is a Genesis chapter 3, verse 15 story. Okay, Nahash is a son of the serpent. Okay, if you go all the way back to Genesis, there's this promise that God makes to Eve that there's going to be offspring born to her, offspring born to the serpent, that there's going to be enmity or strife between the offspring. So we have Saul, the son of the woman, and we have Nahash, son of the serpent, and they're going to have conflict. Okay, so Genesis 3:15 is actually the greater context that this story finds itself in. Okay, next, back to nerdy nuggets, gouging out the right eye. Number one, this is both practical and shameful. Okay, number one, it's practical because this makes the men militarily unable to oppose his rule. So you're making the men weak. You're weakening the military power of the men so that you, as a foreign oppressor, can dominate. Number two, it's just shameful. It's a way to rub it in their face with a physical deformity to remind them that you were the one that has done this. Okay. Now, here's where I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball. This whole chapter, 1 Samuel chapter 11, is deeply, deeply connected to the end of the book of Judges. Okay, remember, the darkest, most twisted, vile, evil part of Judges is Judges chapter 19 and 21. Okay, lots of just, I can't even believe what I'm reading type content in Judges chapter 19 and 21. Now, there are a bunch of connections, okay, between 1 Samuel 11 and Judges chapter 19 and 21. Number one, Jabesh-Gilead and Gibeah are focal points, just geographically. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Judges chapter 19, verse 29, and 1 Samuel chapter 11, verse 7, both talk about cutting people or animals into pieces in order to rally Israel. It's kind of the smoking gun, to be totally honest. So 1 Samuel chapter 11, verse 7, King Saul cuts up oxen, sends them out in order to rally Israel together, okay? Something very, very, very similar happened in Judges chapter 19. Number three, Judges chapter 20, verse 13, and 1 Samuel chapter 11, verse 12, have a massive focus on death. Number four, Judges chapter 20, verse 1, 8, and 11, focus on unity. And the word that's used here in 1 Samuel chapter 11, verse 7, is together as one. Okay, unity. And then lastly, number five, is that Judges chapter 19, verse 22, 20, verse 13, and 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 27. Let's see, 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 27. But some scoundrels said, that word, that is not a common word. Some scoundrels said, how can this fellow save us? They despised him and brought him no gifts, but Saul kept silent. So Saul's called a scoundrel just in the verse before chapter 11 starts. And if you don't remember that word scoundrel, we can go back to Judges chapter 19, verse 22, says this: while they were enjoying themselves, some of the wicked men of the city surrounded the house, pounding on the door. They shouted to the old man who lives in the house. So that wicked men is that word scoundrels. And then we have it again in chapter 20, verse 13 of Judges. Chapter 20, verse 13 of Judges. Now turn those wicked men of Gibeah over to us that we may put them to death and purge this Israel, this evil from Israel. Same Hebrew word, different English words. These are all literary links to link us back to the story of Judges. Those are just a ton of nerdy nuggets. Again, the book of Judges and the book of Samuel are very, very, very connected to each other. I got to give you one nerdy nugget from Samuel chapter 12. You probably wouldn't be able to see this on your own or recognize this on your own. Actually, we can start reading in verse 16. We'll stop at 18. Now then, stand still and see this great thing the Lord is about to do before your eyes. What great thing? Is it not wheat harvest now? Okay, wheat harvest. I will call on the Lord to send thunder and rain, and you will realize what an evil thing you did in the eyes of the Lord when you asked for a king. This is Samuel speaking, not Saul. Samuel. Then Samuel called on the Lord, and that same day the Lord sent thunder and rain. So all the people stood in awe of the Lord and of Samuel. So you may be thinking to yourself, what's so special? It's thunder and rain. Well, you have to really understand geography and understand seasons to get this, but rain never happens in wheat harvest season. Never. Never, 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 never. Okay? So this is 100% miracle rain. Okay? This is defying all the rules of nature. And if I were to add one more just like nerdy nugget. So Saul defeats Nahash in 1 Samuel chapter 11, but this is about to foreshadow another king that's going to defeat another serpent. And this is so subtle, so easy to miss this. And I need you to see this, that good kings are going to fulfill Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. Genesis chapter 3, verse 15 is crushing the head of the serpent. We have a serpent here. His name is Nahash. His name means serpent. But if we keep reading, we're going to read that David kills a giant who's covered in scales. Okay, the Bible is going to depict the armor of Goliath as scaly by attacking and then decapitating Goliath's head. Okay, so both Saul and David are going to fulfill Genesis chapter 3:15. Okay, so both 1 Samuel 11 and 1 Samuel 17 are going to use Genesis chapter 3 verse 15 language to talk about these heroes or these kings defeating enemies that are being depicted as serpent-like or snake-like enemies. That's something that I thought maybe you're probably not going to be able to see. And Jesus is obviously going to pick this up in the New Testament. And we are called to be Genesis 3:15 believers. That's a timeless truth. That our job in the world at large is to subdue the serpent, is to live out the fullness of Genesis, the promise, live out the fullness of the promise of Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. Because good kings always fulfill Genesis 3:15, and Jesus has fulfilled Genesis 3:15 for us, and our job is to live out the abundance, the blessing, the reality of Jesus subduing the snake on our behalf. Okay, that's 1 Samuel chapter 11 and 12. Tomorrow, we've got four chapters. Okay, so double the reading from today. We got chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16 tomorrow for day 152. If you're like, yo, why'd you give us two chapters today, but then four chapters tomorrow? It's so that what you're reading is kind of fits, you know, like chapter 11 and 12 fit together thematically. And so I didn't want to break up the narrative. And then I want to do the same thing tomorrow. So sometimes it's uneven amounts of reading, but the goal is that you're not reading multiple stories at once, but I try to keep chunks together as much as I can. So that explains kind of the uneven nature of the Bible reading plan. So tomorrow's day 152. Hey, if you're on a streak, don't break it. I'll see you right here tomorrow. I'm so proud of you. A decision to get a daily diet of God's word is a decision that will forever change your life. You'll never regret it. I'll see you right here tomorrow as we tackle day 152. Love you guys. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.